Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring and I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask you to hold your calls for the time being because we have with us this evening Mr. Charles Key. Former Representative Charles Key was in the House, the legislature of the state of Oklahoma at the time of the Oklahoma City bombing. And, of course, you remember the date. Never forget the date, April 19th, 1995. Why is that date important? Because 2 years before that, on April 19th, 1993, the FBI had launched their attack on Waco that had led to the death, the murder of the Branch Davidians. Now, why do I say it was murder? Well, if you've seen the video, Waco, A New Revelation, you'll know that the FBI agent in charge of what happened there said this is an open murder scene. And if you've seen that video, you know that there were people there who said that they'd talked to the special forces units who'd gone in to kill the Davidians. Many of the children actually didn't die in the fire. They were simply victims of an explosion in the tower there. And, of course, Jimmy Riddle's body had one arm ripped off. Nobody ever bothered to ask, how did he get an arm ripped off laying there in the middle of the embers? And why was his body not anywhere near as charred as David Koresh, who was supposedly laying just a few feet away from him? So many answered questions. But you see, April 19th, 1993, was a birthday. The birthday of the day that the Redcoats marched on Lexington back in 1775. And, of course, the shot was heard, a shot was fired that was heard around the world. That was the effort of the colonists to resist the tyranny of the crown. I don't think that for 1 minute missed the FBI, who staged that raid on April 19th, 1993. Representative Charles Key, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be with you again.
Yeah, does anybody ever really comment on the significance of those dates?
Yeah, well, in what respect?
Well, the fact that it was back in 1775 on that day that the Redcoats marched on Lexington.
Well, I've heard of those dates before, but it's usually for people like you, unfortunately.
Right, of course.
Not enough people know about that.
Right, and why did the FBI pick that day to attack the Davidian compound? Well, anyway, let's get those. That's a whole different story. Although perhaps it isn't. But are you still working with trying to get the truth out about what really happened there at the Oklahoma City bombing?
Yes, we are. We are still real active. This lawsuit that's been filed against Iraq and has really caused things to really get stirred up a lot. And many things are happening that aren't reaching, the mainstream news, although a lot of it is. This suit against Iraq is responsible to a large degree for all the investigation and looking into what, quote, the government knew before.
You're talking about before the attack on the Murrah building?
Well, I'm talking about what they knew before on 9/11.
All right, fine. Well, then let's get on into this and let's bring us right up to date. Why don't you tell our listeners, some of them may not know about the lawsuit against Iraq for complicity in the Oklahoma City bombing and the fact that the government specifically and intentionally suppressed that information at the Timothy McVeigh's trial.
Yeah, because so many things are connected directly to the Oklahoma City bombing that relate to the 9/11 attack in New York City just last year, and the Pentagon, for that matter. When the Murrah building attack occurred, people will remember that there was the original all-points bulletins. There was actually more than one that was issued by the FBI looking for Middle Eastern suspects.
I remember that so well. I was in a hotel in a airport that day, and I remember hearing those reports coming in, talking about the people in blue jogging suits and the brown pickup, wasn't it, something of the sort?
Yeah, the brown pickup truck.
And, right.
And also another vehicle that was rented from the Dallas airport. was also part of the All Points Bulletin information that was put out originally.
And then something happened just a few hours later. Well, it was almost as if somebody turned a key, and then those were never mentioned again.
Yeah, the FBI pulled that APB, and they began to tell everyone that that's not something that we're going to talk about anymore, and told their agents they're not going to pursue those Middle Eastern suspects and terrorists anymore. And we knew all of that, and there's a lot more Middle Eastern, there's a lot more proof to Middle Eastern involvement in the Oklahoma City bombing case, enough that if entered into the trials of McVeigh and Nichols, would have really opened this thing up in a way that would have shocked many people, just like a couple of the attorneys, one the original attorney for McVeigh when he was first taken into custody said, and later on Stephen Jones said, after this trial, you will not think of your government in the same way again.
Now, basically, Stephen Jones tells that story in both the first and second books, that he was actually not the first attorney to ask to defend McVeigh. There were two attorneys before that, and one of the attorneys, as they were turning the case over to Stephen Jones very early on, said, you know, once you know what we know, you will never look at your country the same way again, because it was very obvious that they were covering up something. They were covering up the Near Eastern involvement. They were covering up the fact that the government knew they were going to blow up the buildings and left those people there to die. That's what's so unconscionable.
Yeah, and that first attorney was a lady named Susan Otto. And
has anybody ever talked to her? You know, certainly Stephen Jones commented that, as I remember, that he had never actually asked her why she said that, but that had stuck in his mind so much that he mentioned it in both of his books, in fact, twice in the last book.
Well, actually, that's been a real tricky thing to get a hold of her. I really, you know, there are some people that have tried to talk to her, and that's still a possibility. It's funny how some of these things are coming to the surface again right now.
Does anybody ever talk to the prosecuting attorneys? Will they talk at all about the fact that you know they were operating under some instructions to keep certain information out of the McVeigh trial? Has anybody ever gotten to them?
No, nobody's got to them, and I'm kind of not real hopeful that that'll happen because I think they're too complicit in the cover-up, and they've lied so much publicly go along with the cover-up that I think they're in it so deep they'll never come out and tell the truth unless you know the dominoes really start falling. But you ask about this other attorney, and I was kind of him-hawing around, like we say in Oklahoma. You know, it's funny, and there's some things I just don't want to say right now, so I don't kind of cause something to go wrong that we're working on.
Okay, well, we would hate to find her in the bottom of a pool someplace. Anyway, let's not speculate, but certainly it's not too healthy sometimes to question these cover-ups.
No, it isn't, but, you know, it's funny things happen as time goes by, and interesting things occur, and there are people that are kind of coming out of the woodwork right now.
They're really have any of the FBI agents come forward?
I know
a couple of them actually appeared on television saying that the government had information and suppressed it, and you know, there just before the execution of Timothy McVeigh, there's suddenly this question was raised, is government withholding evidence, and they've suddenly come up with 3,000 or 5,000 pages of documents that they should have turned over to the defense, they forgot to, and then of course they turned them over and gave the defense a couple of weeks to look at 5,000 pages or whatever it was, and then they proceeded with the execution as quickly as they could. And then, but a couple of these FBI agents said that the important documents still weren't turned over.
Well, there's been a number of agents come forth, and there are still more actually coming forth now. Matter of fact, information that we have and people we're working with right now, there are agents that are being threatened that have already attempted to come forward. And I'm not just talking about people like that's already in the news, like Colleen Rowley and people like that. There are some yet that have not Their names have not surfaced yet.
In other words, they are actually threatening FBI agents not to come forward. Well, I thought that this was openness. I thought that, Robert Mueller, the director of the FBI, was so glad that Colleen Rowley had come forward, and she's a great hero for trying to bring the truth out. And you mean they're threatening other agents to keep them quiet?
Yeah, which is, on one hand, from things we've learned, if one learns a lot about these kind of cases, you learn that that's not really all that surprising on one hand, but something that I found out just recently is surprising to me, that apparently they are just trumping up some charges against one agent in particular just to shut this agent up. And they're going to some pretty great lengths at this time to try to do damage control.
No, in other words, the last thing they want is for the American people to really to learn the truth and the relationship of what happened in 1995 in the Murrah Building and what happened in New York on September 7th. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, I think so, and there's no question about it. And it's easy for them to have so many people complicit in the cover-up and to go along with it because for different reasons. Some people because they're actually could turn out to be criminal charges brought against them. Many others will go along with it simply because it will affect their paycheck, their retirement, and that kind of thing.
Have you talked to Dr. Whitehurst, Fred Whitehurst, who was with the FBI, was in charge of the FBI, or supervised with the FBI lab, who said that, most of the FBI work on the bombing that he's done back in Washington, D.C. was fraudulent?
Yes, oh, definitely. I've spent a long time talking with him.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, he is. And as a matter of fact, he helped us in the writing of our final report on the bombing and the technical aspects of it. We spent 3 days with him going over information relative to the FBI crime lab and forensics so that we would have a better understanding and he could advise us, as to what the meaning of a lot of this stuff and the significance of it is. That's how we came, or that's one of the reasons we were able to come to the conclusion, that there really is no forensic evidence that was available on the Oklahoma City bombing at the trial simply because the government didn't collect it properly, and that would seem to be intentional.
Now, of course, for our listeners out there, we have a four-tape set on the FBI, and it includes my interview with Fred Whitehurst, who was Dr. Fred Whitehurst. Actually, he was in charge of that FBI crime lab or supervisor there, and he pointed out that they were using fraudulent material. They, many times the FBI agents were perjuring themselves, going to trial and giving false testimony. And he kept writing letters to the Inspector General trying to go through the structure of the FBI, pointing out the corruption that was there. And they refused to do anything. And finally, after writing literally hundreds of letters pointing out the corruption that existed in the FBI, trying to keep it within the FBI, they went after him. And eventually, of course, he was forced out of the FBI, but he did win a lawsuit against them so that he could retire and go on with his life. When you realize this is what's really going on, you realize that we don't want to reform the FBI. The only hope for America is to do away with the FBI and the CIA and start from scratch with people who do not have a vested interest in keeping the secrets from the American people.
Well, there's no question in my mind that that's the case. I know people think that there's no other way but to keep the FBI, try to, quote, reform it. But, I just read a real good editorial in our Daily Oklahoman daily newspaper today, syndicated column by this man named Dan Thomason, and just telling the truth and telling it like it is about the FBI and Congress's responsibility and how they have failed in their responsibility to oversee and reform the FBI.
No, I don't think you can reform it. I think you just have to do away with it and start all over again. It's like the public schools. There's no hope for them. Get your kids out of them. If the house is burning down and your kid's in there, are you going to worry about getting your kids out, or are you going to worry about putting out the fire? Well, I want to get my kids out, and the same thing, then worry about the fire. But as far as the FBI is concerned, why, you know, there is no way this organization can be reformed, because any FBI agent who comes forward and tries to tell the truth will be destroyed. Maybe it won't happen to Colleen right now, but her career is over for all intents and purposes.
You know, there's a lot of federal agents in other agencies and in the FBI that have come forward or learned truths because they've listened to programs like yours. And that's one of the things we need. We've needed all this time, and I think programs like yours have helped cause some of these FBI agents that we've talked about before in your program to come forward. People maybe like Colleen Raley. And what we need more of the good people in the FBI and these other agencies to do more than they're doing now. And that is put their own jobs on the line by coming forward, telling the truths about the corruption in the agency. Or if they don't know about any truth, they need to come forward and call for true reform of the FBI or an investigation into it. I agree with you. I don't think it can be reformed. But we need people that are the good people in government to come forward and not just look out for their hindsight and their paycheck and their retirement and hope that somebody else fixes it and it goes away.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've got Gary Aldridge there, who wrote that book when he was the FBI agent working in the White House, and he's actually helping the whistleblowers. He's working with these people and, of course, giving them the support and raising the funds to help them bring their lawsuits so that at least they can protect their pension. And, of course, the FBI is doing everything they can to destroy anybody who tells the truth about anything, like the murder of Vicki Weaver by the FBI. And we still to this day don't know who gave the orders that she was to be murdered. But the orders were given to Lon Horiuchi, simply not only you may fire, you should fire, shoot to kill. And they specifically targeted Vicki Weaver, Randy Weaver's wife. And, of course, the FBI paid $3 million of your tax money to Randy Weaver, so that case would never go to trial, their lawsuit would never go to trial, so the truth would never come out, and the criminals, the murderers, have been promoted and probably allowed to retire at this time. So go ahead, Charles. Now, but let's talk about what you found out about the Oklahoma City bombing.
Well, let me tell you about some new information that's coming forward. I have to apologize. I'm having a problem with my throat. I think I'm catching a little spring virus or something.
Well, I must have got the same one, because I got it just a couple of hours ago, so it must be really going around.
I'm going to try to keep talking without getting too choked up, but there's some really important breaking news. You're aware of the information about Terry Nichols going to the Philippines.
Well, I am, but why don't you tell our listeners, because they may not remember. Terry Nichols, of course, was convicted right along with Timothy McVeigh, but there are many, many people who feel that in many respects Terry Nichols may have been far more important than Timothy McVeigh, because they couldn't even blow up a bottle, you know, 6 months or 9 months before the Oklahoma City bombing, you know, with diesel or whatever they were going to use. But he was over there, and who did he meet with when he was over there? Do we have a pretty good idea?
Well, we know now that he met with Ramzi Yousef, who at one time and back during that period of time was the world's most wanted terrorist.
And of course, he was involved with the bombing of the World Trade Center in February of 1993.
Yes, and as it turns out, the Oklahoma City bombing too. But also he and others that were terrorists down there were ones that Terry Nichols met with. And Terry Nichols went down there and for six successive days met with Ramzi Yousef and other Iraqi terrorists and other terrorists in a Dole processing plant. And during that time, they talked about various targets that they were looking at bombing in the United States, including Oklahoma. They also talked about bomb-making strategies and technical aspects of making bombs. There's no question that there were probably some money that changed hands to help finance the bombing of the Murrah building and whatever else they were planning on doing.
Because, of course, Terry Nichols is a fellow who was doing day labor jobs, and yet he's got money for a long, prolonged trips to the Philippines, flying over there and staying there and with no visible means of support. And where did all the money come from?
Plus, he had a wife that he married there eventually, but some of those trips were made when his wife was back in the United States. She didn't go with him and wasn't part of that trip. And so, you know, there's no excuse there that, well, he and his wife went back to visit her family or anything like that. But still, the fact is, you have witnesses that are coming forward, actually came forward back then. This information was suppressed by our government. Some of it was suppressed by the Justice Department and the FBI, and some of it was suppressed by the judge in the trials of McVeigh.
That was Judge Mache, right?
Yeah, Richard Mache. And Stephen Jones, to his credit, you know, he's received some criticism from some people and some sections, I guess you could say, people that have looked at this. But Stephen Jones tried to bring this information into the trial, and the judge refused to let it in, which is another big problem we've got in this country of judges just refusing to let evidence that has a direct legal connection to a case into a trial. It goes against everything that's American. A jury should look at the evidence in a case so they can make a competent, just decision. And he wouldn't let this information in. So what Stephen Jones did was he took that information, put it in a writ of mandamus, that's just essentially a written report, and filed it with the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals so there would be a public record of it. And that's how we know that information existed, because of his actions to do that. It was a very wise thing to do.
So here we have Terry Nichols over there dealing with Ramzi Yousef, who's been involved in the bombing of the World Trade Center in February of 1993. And, of course, Ramzi Yousef is planning on hijacking American planes and flying them into our buildings. And this is all eventually brought out shortly before the bombing of the Murrah building. Wasn't it Ramzi Yousef fled the Philippines, in early 1995? What was that story?
Yeah, well, what happened in January of 1995, Ramzi Yousef and Abdul Hakim Murad, his roommate and associate that was another Iraqi terrorist, were in their home in the Philippines, and they were experimenting with the creation of a bomb. In other words, they were making a bomb.
In the kitchen sink, as I remember.
Kitchen sink, and it caught fire. So they abandoned the house, and the house caught fire. The fire department shows up, and they eventually take them into custody. They take some materials and other things in the house into custody, which included his laptop computer. And that's where those Philippine authorities discovered, and because they turned it over to U.S. authorities, they discovered that on that laptop computer, they had this big project called Project Bojinka to carry out various terrorist acts, including flying American commercial airliners, hijacking them, and flying them into targets in the U.S., like the World Trade Center.
Right. In fact, you know, that's really what's so interesting, is that when the Washington Post or the establishment publications talk about what was in the computer, they always say yes, and they were going to fly the planes into the Pentagon or into the CIA building, I guess is what it was. But, of course, if you read Bill Gertz's description from the Washington Times, why it was the World Trade Center. Now, somebody is obviously covering up that fact. In other words, somebody is doing damage control to keep the American people from knowing that in 1995 there was evidence they were going to hijack our planes and fly them into the World Trade Center. And the fact that they've been able to suppress that across America reflects the degree of control that today exists over the media. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely. And I would say this, you know, I think anybody that has half a brain, to put it one way, would have to say that if we had law enforcement that had information like that, and let's say the terrorists were planning to fly the planes into the Pentagon or into the CIA headquarters, you wouldn't take that information and just say, well, the only thing that's at risk here is the CIA headquarters. No, you would consider that the terrorists may have other targets, too, and that is such a serious problem that you're talking about not only a law enforcement agency of the United States, but you're talking about innocent people that may be at risk. So you would take extreme precautions and have a much wider purview of what the targets may be, other than just one stated target, if that were the case. And so I'm just kind of thinking ahead, looking at how we, and we've seen this just in the last few weeks, in the last few months, as we've seen the FBI and others in the executive branch essentially make excuses and frankly outright lie about what they did or did not know at certain points in time. The fact is they did know, and they knew a lot more than what they've been claiming all along.
What they're trying to do is just give us so many facts that we you can't see the forest for the trees. The one question is, who ordered there would be no plane scramble that morning to intercept the hijacked plane, because automatically fighter planes are scrambled whatever a commercial airliner is hijacked. But that morning, no planes were scrambled. So somebody had to give the order. And then finally, when they brought the plane, the fighter planes in, instead of taking them off from Langley Air Force Base, where they are just 2 minutes or 3 minutes away from Washington, D.C., they bring them in from Cape Cod and Rhode Island, and they sent them off the wrong direction, and they arrived 12 minutes after the plane has crashed into the Pentagon. Now, anybody who believes that our military is that inefficient probably has stock in Enron and Tyckert and Global Crossing.
Yeah. You know, and here's another thing about this whole connection, these connecting of the dots. Just in the last 24 hours or so, I guess it goes back to last week, about 4 or 5 days ago, there's been various newspapers, and now mainstream newspapers and other media are beginning to write more about this and follow this trail, which would hopefully indicate that it's going to open up a lot bigger than it already has, and it'll connect the dots back to Oklahoma City. They're reporting that Ramzi Yousef's uncle was also in the Philippines at the time that we were just discussing, when Terry Nichols was there. And they're also reporting that now the federal government officials are saying that they believe he was this same uncle of Ramzi Yousef, Ramzi Yousef being this biggest terrorist in the world for many years, who was finally taken into custody and is now in prison in the United States. His uncle is now believed to be the, or at least one of the, masterminds behind the 9/11.
You mean now that we've killed all those people in Afghanistan, we find maybe Osama bin Laden really didn't plan the whole thing?
Well, I think they're still saying that they think he worked with or through Osama bin Laden. But, you know, what I've been saying here lately on programs like yours, and I think we've talked about this in the past, you know, I wish they would just make their mind up. They seem to jump back and forth from who they think is responsible. And I think they believe, and to some degree they're probably true, that so many people in America aren't paying attention that they can get away with just changing the facts and changing the story. But
what is that old saying? You know, it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough, people will believe.
Yeah, Hitler said that too.
Right, right.
And the fact is, either they don't know, which may be the case, they're making it up as they go along, or they're just continually covering their backside as some media, for whatever their purposes are. Some of them are probably really trying to dig out the truth and report on it. Others are probably trying to scoop other rivals. But as this comes out, they're probably scrambling so much they can't keep up with it and tank the stories. But the truth is, and the fact is, that's coming out, is that Ramzi Yousef and other people associated with him, including this uncle, were planning these things all the way back in. And it goes back to 1993, actually.
And, Chris, Osama bin Laden apparently was in the Philippines in 1992. We're going to get to ask and cover all of these things in just a moment here. But we got a three-minute break, Charles. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we really would appreciate if many of you out there would give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us do what we do 5 hours a day. As we talk, starting at 7 o'clock in the morning, going until 10 o'clock at night, we do 5 hours of talk radio during the weekdays. We do 2 hours on the weekend. In fact, we're considering very seriously doing an extra hour. In fact, it'll be heard up in the Great Northwest. We're in the process now of just trying to get people to pledge to help us for a six-month period so that we can actually have a program that'll be heard every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, and then we can syndicate that across America. And if we can get the commitments for 6 months, I think in 6 months, the program will pretty well take care of itself. So if you're out there listening to our program and you'd like to make a pledge for whatever you could afford to, so I know I'll have the income coming in for the next 6 months, then we'll commit to do that program, and that'll give us a third program on Saturday. But I do what I do because freedom is at stake, and if we don't bring America back, if we don't waken the American people up, if we don't cause them to realize that behind all of these machinations that go on is a spiritual battle, for as someone once wrote, behind that all the foes have plotted, behind that all of saints have planned, behind the schemes of men and demons is a higher hidden hand. And there really is. And behind that, of course, is God Almighty. But the forces of darkness are working behind the scenes and, of course, have scripted so much of what's going on today. And if you doubt that, of course, we have some of the writings of the Luciferians where they tell you who really runs the world. If you'd like the little pamphlet that they put out called The Spiritual Hierarchy, which I got from the Lucius Trust, one of their front organizations. It used to be the Lucifer Publishing House, but, well, a lot of people thought that Lucifer had a bad connotation. A lot of people think that that's the devil. Well, it is the devil, as a matter of fact. So they changed the name to Lucius Trust. But they work and operate out of New York and Geneva and London. And if you'd like their little pamphlet, why, we'll be glad to send it to you free of charge. Just call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, we hope that many of you will want to subscribe to our newsletter. Many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and that some of you will want to make a six-month commitment for so much a month or one donation. Just let us know so that we can make our plans, because I would love to be doing a program in the Northwest every Saturday morning and then syndicate that across America. Because if we don't get to the American people and educate them about what's really going on behind the scenes, and the fact that they're not getting the truth from Barbara Walters and Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw, and the controlled media in America. Do you know that we have, I think, 1,700 daily newspapers, and 95% of them are controlled by 15 major corporations, all of which have the same basic liberal thrust, all of which certainly do not allow the truth to be given to the American people. You may wonder why you go from network to network and really there's not much difference in the news they're presenting. And the reason, of course, is because somebody is controlling what the American people think. Well, if anyway, under any circumstances, remember our number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. America is under siege today. Well, Dr. Stan back here, our guest this evening is former Representative Charles Key, who risked his political reputation to try to bring out the truth about what happened in Oklahoma City. And, of course, he was thwarted at every turn, but eventually put out a wonderful, wonderful report. We have copies of it, and you can actually see those pillars in the Murrah Building. It looks like somebody had cut them right across square with either a saw or maybe a explosive cutting charge. How can people get copies of your Oklahoma City report? Now, you can't give the price on it on the station, but you can certainly tell people how to get it.
800 number, which a toll-free number, 800-334-5597.
All right, that's 800-334-5597. And it is certainly a real eye-opener.
Well, they can go to our website, which is okcbombing.org, and we've been doing a tremendous amount of updating of that site, a lot of new information there. And I suggest people, even if they already have the report, go to the site and look at the new information that's up there, and we're doing a lot of work on it right now.
Okay, and I think that what people have to understand is that there was a very definite relationship between the Oklahoma City bombing and Iraq, and that was covered up intensely by our government at that time. Guys, don't forget, we financed and we backed Saddam Hussein from 1979 when he came into power, right up to the time of the Gulf War. And then, of course, we intentionally left him in power, the wicked, wicked Saddam Hussein. We left in power after the Gulf War because we didn't want to destabilize the area. Then we put an embargo on Iraq so we could topple Saddam Hussein and destabilize the area, which resulted in the deaths of 500,000 Iraqi children because we withheld vaccinations and medicines and of course, about 1.5 million Iraqi citizens. And now, of course, things have gotten better the last few years. But believe me, every Arab in the Near East and Middle East knows that we killed 500,000 children. And, of course, we had left Saddam Hussein in power. And then, of course, we put an embargo on to topple Saddam Hussein. And they know there's something wrong with the picture. It's just that the average American isn't smart enough to see the nose on his own face. If we have backed Saddam Hussein, he is the finest enemy that money could buy. Well, why don't you pick up the story from there, Charles?
Well, you know, some other recent developments, you have these FBI agents that we've kind of referred to. There's a number of them that have come out over the last several months, and some of them have been have taken legal counsel with David Shippers, the former House counsel that was actually senior counsel for the House Judiciary Committee when the impeachment proceedings against Clinton were brought. And those agents have information about Middle Eastern suspects in the Oklahoma City case, and that they were pursuing those suspects, but they received orders from up above that said, do not pursue those Middle Eastern suspects anymore. The case will just focus on McVeigh and Nichols.
In other words, they were told to let people who were obviously involved in the murder of 168 Americans, they were told to just not investigate them?
Not investigate them, not pursue them at all.
Would any of those FBI agents be willing to come on the radio, do you think?
Well, I think they're trying to, I think they would be, but I think they're trying to protect themselves, and that's why they went and got legal counsel, and that's causing them to remain in this status right now, waiting. David Shippers actually has said publicly that he wants to bring those FBI agents to the Congress and put them before a House or Senate committee where they can go under oath and have protection of Congress.
And that's why George Bush is doing everything he can to block an independent investigation. And, of course, they just want the Senate Intelligence Committee, which has been covering up this whole thing for years, to continue covering it up. And I say that without any hesitation. If you read the book, The American Jihad, by Stephen Emerson, which is available through Radio Liberty, why, there you'll see the testimony before that same Senate Intelligence Committee back in 1996 by an American Muslim who said why the whole Islamic terrorist movement is being largely funded from the United States today, 1996. And, of course, we had no idea where the money was coming from.
And I understand even Saddam Hussein and George Bush Sr. might have been business partners or had some kind of business dealings in the past.
I've heard exactly the same thing.
And then likewise with Osama bin Laden. So these relationships.
Well, we know that Osama bin Laden, from several different independent sources, was in the American hospital in Dubai in June or July of last year. And, of course, at least according to the article in the Figueroa, the French newspaper, why he was visited by an agent of the CIA. And anybody who would like a copy of those articles, we have them. Give us a call and ask for, the articles about Osama bin Laden being visited by the CIA. Now, if he was such a terrible person and was responsible for all these terrorist attacks on America, and we knew that and we've been monitoring and been trying to do something about him, why would our CIA be visiting Osama bin Laden in the hospital in Dubai? And it's not just one source. I have other sources that comes from, and, of course, in Europe, many, many people believe that Osama bin Laden has always been a CIA operative. I'm not saying that's true, but there was an article in the latest New Yorker that mentions that, of course, deridingly, that why these conspiratorialists who, quoting the Arabs who believe Osama bin Laden has always been part of the CIA.
Well, I'm convinced of this, that we have other Robert Hansons, Robert Hanson being the high-level FBI agent and supervisor that was a spy for other countries and was responsible for the death of a number of other agents.
And they let him off. All you have to do is just plead guilty and we won't execute you. And not only that, we'll give your pension to your wife. What's wrong with this picture?
Well, you know how fast they wanted to execute Tim McVeigh, and you compare that to what they've allowed with Robert Hansen, who you can try to make some comparison, but you know that there was you would think that there's either at least an equality in the magnitude of their crimes, but in any event, for anyone to think that Robert Hansen was the only guy out there that's selling America down the river, I think would be somewhat naive. But the real telltale signs are that when you see what's going on in the FBI and other law enforcement or intelligence agencies of the United States, it walks like a duck, it talks like a duck. There are other people in our government that are keeping the information from going to the proper places, and there are people that are keeping it from being acted upon. And that's not incompetence. Those agencies and those people are not that incompetent. Someone is intentionally keeping this information from being acted on or being known by other agencies so that it can properly be assessed and then acted upon. And that's because we've got other Robert Hansons, and some of them might be spies that are selling out for money and for, you know, some sense of power. But I'm convinced in my mind that in addition to that, you've got some that are simply moles, that are simply ideologically opposed to the United States, and they've made their way into those positions to help bring down this country.
No, I think you're probably absolutely right. The only question is, who are they really working for? Well, what now? Of course, we have the FBI agents who wants to come forward, and David Shippers is representing them. And then we have this tie-in between Terry Nichols, who is known as the farmer, and Osama bin Laden, and at least Ramzi Yousef. Although, had you looked at all into the fact that Osama bin Laden had been there in 92, I think it was?
Yeah, no question about it. He came down and was treated kind of... given the royal treatment by the Filipino government because of the wealth that he had. And who knows, you know, more may come out, but it may be that because he had some connection to the United States intelligence agencies, he was also given special treatment.
And, of course, then they formed the Abu Sayyaf organization about that same time. And one of the two co-founders of that just happened to be a Philippine intelligence agent operating as within the Muslim extremist movement, pretending to be a radical Islamist. And he was really working for the Philippine intelligence. Have you gotten into that at all?
Yeah, and Edward Angeles.
Edward Angeles. And then, of course, after the Abu Sayyaf people kidnapped the Burnhams, and they're surrounded by the Philippine army, and then they go out the back door and escape into the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, somebody in government allowed them to take the Burnhams out into the jungle. And, of course, as you know, it eventually ended up with the husband being killed and the wife being rescued. But obviously somebody was protecting Abu Sayyaf, but then it's very, very profitable. You've got the Muslim terrorists there, and they get millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars of American tax money because they have these radical Islamic terrorists there. And yet, of course, this organization was co-founded by the Philippine intelligence. Maybe things are not exactly as they appear to be.
Yeah, there's a lot rotten in Denmark, and you know, the American people need to wake up and take a higher level of interest in this, in activity, or it will, you know, circumvent all freedoms that we have.
Now, who were these? We don't necessarily have to give the names, but what was the tie-in between John Doe 2 and John Doe 3 and John Doe 4, and these Muslim these Muslim or Arabs and Saddam Hussein in Iraq?
Well, you have these Iraqi soldiers that were allowed into this country, former Iraqi soldiers who fought against us in the 92-93 Desert Storm War.
Now, these were actually Republican Guard. These weren't simply Iraqi soldiers. These were, weren't these Republican Guard soldiers?
That's the reports that have been done by other media so far. Our State Department was pushing to allow these thousands. And the last number that we had was an estimation of just over 10,000 that they be allowed to have asylum in our country. And that's even in the face of a number of congressmen and U.S. senators protesting that, trying to stop it.
So why did we bring in these radical Islamists into America and allow them to settle here and set up, have some of them actually set up terrorist cells? Do we know that?
Well, it would appear that way. It's kind of hard to, you know, confirm like we confirm a lot of other evidence of that, but it sure, by all accounts that we do have, it seems that way. The information that Jana Davis and Brad Edwards did, two reporters for the NBC affiliate station here in Oklahoma City, would indicate that there was a terror cell. And then you have the reports from a CNN reporter and a Canadian news broadcasting company report that say that Oklahoma City actually had the second largest population of radical Islamic fundamentalists in North America. So there's a lot of information and more that would indicate that there are cells, and not only are there cells, but Oklahoma City happened to have one of the largest populations.
Well, now, of course, I'm sure you know Craig Roberts, and Colonel Roberts has said that, you know, there are a couple of these Islamic radicals dressed in blue jogging clothes who are actually saving the place in front of the Murrah building for Timothy McVeigh's truck. Have you ever heard that story? Is there any truth to it?
Well, that's what some witnesses claim, that there were those that were holding this place. And
if anybody's read Timothy McVeigh's the book that supposedly Timothy McVeigh dictated to these two reporters from the Buffalo newspaper, supposedly he lit the fuses to these massive bombs. You know, when it was a couple of minutes away from the Murrah building, how did he know there was going to be able to get a place to park in front of the Murrah building? What do you do when you've lit the fuses and they burn from the cabin of the truck back into the back of it? What do you do if there's no place to park in front of there?
Yeah, it really is asinine.
I mean, somebody, he had to know that he was going to have a parking place.
Yeah. I mean, it's read that book on McVeigh that allegedly is with McVeigh's input and supposedly in his words is a big hoax.
It sure was. It looks like it was, to me, it looks like there was a large CIA input into that, a cover story to just confuse the American people once more.
But, you know, there's even more information that's starting to come out. It's coming out faster now. There's some recent information also in the last couple of days where the media is starting to report on the cooperation between skinheads, Aryan Nation types, neo-Nazi types with Middle Eastern terrorists. And, you know, this is something that we reported on way back in the early days of the Oklahoma City bombing, and we included that information in our report. We even were able to finance a trip of a local attorney, Mike Johnston, who also is the attorney that put this suit against Iraq together. But he went on this trip back in 1996 to England and to Germany for a couple of reasons. The first reason was to try and get an interview with Andy Strassmeier, the West German that you've covered very well in your programs over the years, and his significance to the case, but also to investigate this relationship that neo-Nazis have with Middle Eastern terrorists. And that report that he put together, I believe it's about 11 or 12 pages, is in our 555-page report. And it verifies and documents that these folks have been working together. In other words, white Americans or Europeans that are neo-Nazis and that type, Aryan Nation, what have you.
Because they both hate the Jews.
Yeah, they've been working together for a long time. It's well documented. In the United States, we haven't been used to that. We haven't been used to seeing that. But in Europe, it's well documented. through the major media over there.
Well, because the Nazis always worked with the Muslim leaders. That's what most people don't understand. And certainly the high mufti there of Palestine worked very closely with the Nazis.
Well, see, and now this is starting to come out with this latest guy named Jose Padilla, who was just arrested just in the last day or couple of days.
Now tell us about that. I'm not up on that.
Well, he's this he's a Puerto Rican of descent, but was born in Brooklyn, New York, moved to South Miami, later moved to Chicago, was basically a street thug, as the reports are saying, has a long list of various types of crime, of breaking and entering and firing firearms and just general kinds of low-level kind of crimes, or mid-level kinds of crimes, and then he goes over to Pakistan. He becomes a Muslim, goes to Pakistan, and supposedly gets married, and then comes back to this country. When he gets off the airplane, they arrest him for supposedly being a part of what they're calling an effort to have a dirty bomb, and that's a bomb that combines explosives and radioactive type material, and to set a bomb off like that, possibly in Washington, D.C. or some other large city in the United States. Well, that may or may not be true that he was part of that. One of the things that's very interesting in this story, kind of a side note from what we're talking about, is with the laws that they've passed, these unconstitutional laws like the one they call the U.S. Patriot Act and others, here a person is a U.S. citizen. Still, this man's a U.S. citizen. And he gets off the airplane, and they take him into custody. And President Bush himself was saying that this guy is, I'm trying to think of the words he used, but it was something like a militant enemy or a military enemy of the United States. And he no longer has any constitutional rights. They take him into custody. He'll be under military-type guard. And who knows if he'll get a trial or not. And I'm certainly not speaking in favor of anybody that's a terrorist or that's planning to do that kind of activity. But we're just on the doorstep of them being able to point at somebody and go drag them off and take them off, and they call them a terrorist or an enemy of the people for practically anything they want to.
Well, of course, if he was really planning on being involved in a terrorist plot to, obviously we have infiltrated all of these terrorist movements. We have for many, many years. The only way they would know what he was doing if they were able to tap his conversations.
Well, and even if they do, there are still certain rules of law that have to be operated under, and that's really the point. And we're at a point now where we're moving beyond the rule of law to where people like Christians or homeschoolers and others are targets for the FBI, according to their own documentation, like Project Megiddo, as being terrorists or potential terrorists.
And, of course, while they were investigating the Christians in America, they refused to investigate the terrorists. At least we're told that. And anybody who out there in the listening audience who does not believe that the FBI considers people who talk about the Constitution or who believe in the end times, they call it doomsday philosophy, but anybody who talks about the Constitution or adheres to the Constitution is should to be considered a terrorist, go to my website at RadioLiberty.com and look at the circular put out by the FBI in Phoenix, Arizona. At the same time they were pulling the FBI agents off their investigation of terrorism, they were emphasizing you can really tell a terrorist because, of course, he talks about the Constitution. And as one of the FBI agents asked me, do you believe that these are the end times? Yeah, of course, Christians have always believed that. But that qualifies you as a terrorist. If you believe that these may be the end times, why, you could be a terrorist, too. Go up our webpage. It's the FBI Circular. If you don't have the web, why, give us a call and we'll get you a copy. Well, there are all sorts of exciting things going on today. You would think that the American people would understand that so much of what's going on today really has nothing to do with terrorism. It has to do with taking away the freedom of the American people. But the American people are so terrified of terrorism because we get the calls almost, the reports almost every day of a new terrorist threat, of course, are looking to government to protect us.
Yeah, and so many people, I think there's this level of apathy also that You know, there's various, it's kind of like that movie The Matrix, you know, it's not really on a linear scale that people are just fearful. There, you've got people that are fearful, you've got people that are apathetic, you've got people that are just totally checked out of current events and things going on in the government and political, in the political arena, and they spend their time being entertained when they're not working to make money so they can spend that money to be entertained and accumulate things.
Amen to that. Well, look, our guest this evening has been Representative Charles Key from Oklahoma. If you'd like to get their material, it's the OKCBombing.org. OKCBombing.org is the website, www.OKCBombing.org. Telephone number is 800-334-559. What is it? 5597?
5597.
Okay, fine. Well, I really want to thank you so much for being with us, and I'm looking forward to having you on our other programs. We've just got to get the American people to understand that until we know the truth about what happened and who was responsible for the deaths of those 168 people, 169 because there was an extra leg there, somebody else got blown up, but of course the government doesn't want you to know that. They even buried the leg in the wrong casket. Incredible things that really happened to conceal the truth from the American people. So God bless you, Charles, and we'll be talking to you, I guess, a little later this week.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've put together something called the Oklahoma City Special, and it actually has 2 4 tape sets and 2 videos and a great new book called the OKC City Bombing, OKC Bomb, written by Jim Keith shortly before his untimely
and unfortunate
death. Well, of course, we certainly would hope that many of you out there in the listening audience will be listening to us on a regular basis and telling others about our program. We put together a lot of the facts about the OK City bombing in this OK Oklahoma City special, but understand behind everything going on are spiritual forces. Only then can you really understand what this X factor is that really works behind the scenes, suppressing truth and moving us ever closer to the New World Order, the New World Religion. So we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders. And please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so we'll be with you tomorrow again. Until then, may the Lord be with you. Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our colleagues. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because we have with us on the line from Sacramento, from the Campaign for California Families, Randy Thomason. Hi, Randy. How are you doing?
Dr. Stan, good music, good words. Good to talk with you, and hello, everyone.
Okay, fine. Well, Randy, of course, works up there in the Sacramento and the belly of the beast, and even to those people out across America. You have to understand that California leads the way. California is the sixth largest economy in the entire world. If you had California listed as a nation, we would be number six behind the United States and probably Japan and Germany. And I suspect that our overall economy is probably even greater than that of the Soviet Union, China itself. Perhaps not China. China's coming into its own. So what happens in California does impact eventually on the people throughout the rest of the world. So tell us what's happening in California.
Well, I'm hoping that the people are waking up, because that's exactly what needs to happen. We've got an election year, Dr. Stan, as you know, and I think there needs to be a change. When we look at what has happened in California over the last 3 years of the Davis administration, we now see the pinnacle of it occurring. The governor has issued a proclamation of a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, LGBT proclamation, and it's celebrating, quote, June Pride 2002. This is, of course, the homosexual and transsexual agenda, sex change operations done by junk science doctors. Dr. Stan, you would never do one of those, would you?
Well, of course, as an orthopedic surgeon, I was never qualified for that, but I certainly wouldn't. I think it's an aberration, you know. It's a triumph of science over good judgment. God made us male and female, whether we like what we are or not. We certainly can't change what God has done.
Right, and, up on the second floor of the Capitol, the second floor rotunda, this is right in near the Assembly Speaker's office, there is a whole setup, a display of homosexuality and transsexuality. It's celebrating homosexual behavior, two men going at it, two women going at it, and it's like, it's something that's set up as a display with posters, and even some pictures, and it's something that's displayed for children to see. I mean, there's school kids going through the Capitol, tours go right through there, and I've got to think that there's just a couple red faces at this time. Of course, this was approved by the Democrat leaders of the state legislature, John Burton of the Senate and Herb Wesson of the Assembly. But it's putting a face upon the agenda that, and Governor Gray Davis signed a big proclamation, celebrating, these weren't his words, but he was celebrating four laws that he has put into place, and one resolution that he had done, basically allowing homosexual adoptions. That was a internal policy he did in 99. Undermining marriage in 99 and also 2001, homosexual curriculum and promotion in the schools, that was in 99 and 2000, and fines against persons of business and property owners if they don't hire or rent to a homosexual activist. Now look at that as an application to a Christian bookstore. You could have a Christian bookstore right there on the coast, A homosexual activist applies for the job. The Christian bookstore owner says, you know what, your lifestyle is not representative of our business. You know, we are trying to do things biblically here. And so, unfortunately, I have to say no. The homosexual activist could go file a lawsuit, or actually a complaint with the state. The state comes in with their own attorneys, and without a trial, could fine that Christian bookstore up to $150,000. That's an attack upon faith. It's an attack upon conscience. It's an attack upon free speech. And so Governor Gray Davis, by touting that he signed laws like this, is actually got less in common with the families of California, more in common with some of the Swedish parliament, which is actually entertaining a new law in Sweden to penalize people who speak against homosexuality. So what I'm saying right now would be unconstitutional in Sweden. What you say, Dr. Stein, would be unconstitutional, even if we talk about the unhealthy consequences of homosexual behavior, which are undeniable.
No, to Chris, Randy, what you're really seeing is organized depravity. And what you're really seeing is an effort to kill off the homosexuals. Because, the last thing we should be doing, if we care about homosexuals, is to tell them what they're doing is normal, because it's going to kill them. And so if you understand that the people who are pushing this agenda really understand its consequences, really understand that these homosexuals, if one in three lesbians is going to have breast carcinoma, that certainly the average homosexual is going to die in his early 40s or late 30s, if you really believe in population control, this is a great, great accomplishment. And the fact that they can sell this to the American people, so uncaring and unconcerned about the homosexuals, and thinking this is, giving them the freedom. Freedom is never to do or engage in unbiblical activity, because there are consequences, and in this case, the consequence is death.
And look at this, Dr. Stan. Now we're fighting a bill up in Sacramento that is going to be indoctrinating foster children and foster parents to accept and promote homosexuality, bisexuality, and transsexuality, the sex change philosophy. AB 2651 has already passed the state assembly by one vote. It's in the state senate. I testified against that bill, along with others, in a committee hearing just the other day, and it was outrageous. I mean, all the Democrats in the committee supported it. I won't forget Sacramento's state senator, Deborah Ortiz, a Democrat, who said that she couldn't figure out why foster parents were afraid of being educated and enlightened, quote-unquote. You see, she had just heard from some Christian foster parents who didn't want to endure sensitivity training from the state so that they could become accepting of sex change operations and the homosexual lifestyle lived out under their own roofs by confused kids. I mean, kids who are in foster care, most of them have been sexually molested, and they are literally screwed up in their heads on this issue. They don't know what's up, they don't know what's down, they've been very much abused and neglected, and for the state to be targeting these vulnerable foster children, the most vulnerable children outside of the womb, for this type of indoctrination is I can't imagine something worse for these kids.
No, is the state going to pay for their sex change operations or what?
No, it won't be that. It'll be indoctrinating them.
Okay.
It'll put this bill, AB 2651, will put the state of California on record as promoting homosexuality, bisexuality, and transsexuality within the whole foster care system, and actually counseling children to accept this once they get a phone call from any child. And so this is something that is very, very concerning. I'd like to direct people in our last minute here to our website. The Campaign for California Families website is savecalifornia.com. If you go to savecalifornia.com and you click the bills, you can actually go to the link for AB 2651, and you can send an email opposing that to Gray Davis and all 40 state senators with one click of the button. We need more people involved, more people from your neck of the woods, Dr. Stan, and I appreciate being on your program tonight.
All right, fine. How is our state senator, Bruce McPherson, on this bill?
He has not said anything publicly on it. He has not had a chance to vote yea or nay in committee, but we urge people to contact Bruce McPherson and urge him to oppose AB 2651, the transsexual agenda bill, the transsexual foster care bill. Also, you can call Governor Gray Davis, who has not said where he'll be on this, and that's good because we want him to be nervous about this bill in an election year. You can call Gray Davis at 916-445-2841, 916-445-2841. Urge Governor Davis and the state senators to oppose AB 2651, the transsexual foster care bill. It's outrageous, and it needs to be stopped, and we can rise up in this election year and hold the line, so to speak. And then hopefully in November we'll have some exciting change up in Sacramento, because we definitely need it.
Well, now let me ask you, what is the fallout on this? Was it the Oracle, a software that we bought without competitive bids, that was going to cost us $30 or $40 million more than if we just bought it from somebody else? What about the fact that they were giving political gifts to Governor Davis after his administration gave them this windfall? Talking about windfall profit, this gives windfall profits a bad name.
Well, this is obviously an administration that is not interested in morality, but is interested very much in money.
Aren't there laws against non-competitive bids? Isn't that against the law?
In several sections of the state law, there are provisions. I'm not clear on all of them, Dr. Stan, but there are laws that are basically designed to prevent bribes from being taken. Corruption and bribes in government are against the law. Now, when you have money funneling toward an re-election campaign of Governor Gray Davis, either quickly before or quickly after a company is given this grand project and a huge financial bid accepted, then they seem so much intertwined. You'd think that to hide it, they would delay the campaign contribution maybe a couple months. But it was all together, and that's why there's some investigations going on right now, and that's appropriate.
Well, of course, these investigations always seem to be like, Gray Davis investigating Gray Davis and finding that Gray Davis has done nothing wrong. We saw that, of course, with their investigation of Enron during the electricity crisis here about a year and a half ago. And it was very obvious what they were doing.
Yeah,
it was obvious to me, and I kept saying it over and over again on the radio. But Bill Lockyer, Attorney General, just could never find anything wrong. And he said, I'd sure like to find something wrong, but he could never do it. And I talked to his press secretary, and he told me that he wasn't allowed to say anything. Well, of course he wasn't allowed to say anything, because it was all a cover-up. They were all in bed together. Do you honestly believe that the administration that was getting big kickbacks from Enron was going to find anything wrong with Enron?
Right, exactly. And this is being played out right now in the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, which is basically getting testimony from various people involved in this Oracle scandal. Now, there's two different people to watch there. One is Dean Flores, who's a Democrat from the Central Valley, and he tends to be somewhat independent, and he's the most conservative Democrat in the state the state assembly. And Dean Flores is not doing Davis's bidding. He's actually going after this. Now, there's another man who's recently been added to the committee. He's your state assemblyman, Fred Keeley of Santa Cruz, Boulder Creek area. And Fred Keeley is Davis's man. And all the media know it up here. And they're saying Fred Keeley was put on this committee to protect Gray Davis. And so it's all going to be sort of fought out there in sort of a court of public opinion. If it adds up to a real type of court, you'll be closer to the November election. And, of course, that would be deleterious for Gray Davis, because that's the last thing he wants, something that would enter into some type of criminal proceedings closer to the election.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so very much, Randy. And again, that's the Campaign for California Families and the website, www.savecalifornia.com. Telephone number, 916-445-2841.
God bless you. That's Gray Davis, but call him.
Okay, fine.
Urgent to oppose AB 2651. God bless you, Dr.
Bye-bye. Sam. Okay. And that was Randy Thomason up there in Sacramento, and that 916 number is the governor. 916-445-2841. And if you'd like to give the governor a call and just let him know what you think, Huey Long was a corrupt Southern politician. But of course, the current administration in Sacramento has nothing on that at all. The Clinton administration was filled with corruption. But of course, we've got real problems with the current administration as well. Most people don't want to say that, but the largest single contributor to the Bush campaign was Enron. And of course, what are they doing? Are they investigating Kenneth Lay, who led Enron? No, we're investigating the auditors, Anderson, I believe it is. And of course, we're going after them, and we're analyzing what they did and why they shredded some of the documents. When was the last time they called Kenneth Lay and put him under cross-examination? Well, he just said he couldn't testify because his lawyer told him not to. And he's going to get off, and the people at the highest levels of Enron are going to get off scot-free, and they're going to find some patsy to be the fall person. And then the American people will be patted on the head and said, see, we have truth in government. And now the guilty parties have been punished. Well, unfortunately, that's not usually the way it goes. And talking about punishing guilty parties, with us on the line right now is Brad Dacus. And Brad is with the Pacific Justice Institute. And he's on the front line of this legal battle. Brad, thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
Well, let's bring us up to date with what the Pacific Justice Institute is doing, these cases that you have in defense of freedom, in defense of Christianity and Christians.
Oh, you bet. An interesting case that actually recently made the editorial column of the Wall Street Journal that we've handled is one involving a union up in the state of Washington. In fact, it's the largest employees union, I believe, in the state of Washington. It's the Public Employees Public Education Union. And an employee there was real concerned about how the union was using his money to funding liberal causes and candidates. And of course, as you know, Dr. Stanley, we deal with these all the time, but this is a little different. In this situation, the union said, okay, fine, we'll let you have all your union dues go to a charity, but the charity has to be the ACLU. And, of course, this man says, look, I don't believe in supporting the ACLU. I don't believe in what they're about. So we went ahead and sent a demand letter to the union, and I'm pleased to announce that the union has completely backed off, and he is now going to have his union dues go to a wonderful charity that really serves people who are poor and hungry.
Well, I think that's great. And, of course, the problem is that when you come up against this union with countless millions of dollars to spend on lawyers, the average individual doesn't know what to do. And sometimes it's better to switch than fight. But with Pacific Justice Foundation there to represent people, level out the playing field, don't you?
Yeah, we certainly do. We have a huge network of volunteer affiliate attorneys, over 1,000 nationwide, and over 500 in California alone. And so it's very effective in what we do to do just that, to level the playing field. And then it comes down to the law and justice and the Constitution. And generally speaking, we win on those points.
All right, well, let's just go over some of the other things that you're doing now, because you are in just the middle of all sorts of various lawsuits, and, do you have any other lawyers actually working there at the headquarters with you?
Yeah, actually, we do. Let me give you a little backdrop of how we have on staff. We have two other attorneys who work in our office. June Jantz, she's our litigation coordinating attorney, and she does a great job. She spent about 4 or 5 years in a district attorney's office in in California, and then a couple of years in civil practice, and she's just doing a really great job. She's also a preacher's kid, so she definitely understands the religious aspects of many of her clients, and just does a great job. In fact, it's sort of funny because one day she was, I hear, you know, talking and with an attorney representing a union, the Teamsters Union, and the union representative said that, attorney said, you know, I'm just not used to working with such a nice, kind attorney like you. You're just so nice and kind. And then she responded, well, you did give us everything we asked for. He said, yeah, I guess I did. So she's very effective in keeping track of the many, many cases. It's just too much for me to handle on my own, that's for sure. And then we also have Roger Ho. Now, Roger Ho is an interesting gentleman. He's a very gifted and talented research writer and legal writer. So he really gets into the heart of cases and this wonderful research support for attorneys with cases, and also helping us decide whether or not we've got a winner, whether or not we could win a case. And that's real important on the upfront.
Now, is Roger an attorney?
Yeah, he's an attorney also.
Well, I can remember when you just got started with this and you were there all by yourself in just a little tiny office after you left Rutherford.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't even have really an office. I shared part of a little office with a secretary, and that was it. And yeah, it was we didn't start with a huge, gigantic grant from some rich uncle. We started bare bones, and God took it and ran with it and really raised it up. In fact, we just moved to a new office location where we went from about 1,000 square feet to about 2,600 square feet, and the tri-level, and the conference room. And so God's continuing to provide for us, and now we also have a three on the administrative side that are involved in helping keep track of everything as well. And then we have internship programs. This summer, we have three law student interns coming in, and three administrative homeschool private school students coming in to intern.
All right, now what are some of the other things? Because there seems to be a real anti-Christian bias on parts of various organizations and even on part of government, certainly on the part of our schools. Some of the things going on in the schools are just so reprehensible. They're using the schools to indoctrinate our children in immorality in violation of every one of the educational tenets and even many of our educational laws. Are you involved in some of those cases?
Oh, yes.
Well, why don't you tell us about some of them?
You bet. I think the audience, some may come to mind, some of them may not have heard. But these are cases that are very, it's been so shocking that the O'Reilly Factor, Bill O'Reilly has covered us four times so far this year on his show, just so far this year, because of our public school cases. For example, in Arcata, California, we have a case there presently involving a Planned Parenthood who came on the school campus without parents knowing about it, and had kids stand outside a circle whenever they answered the question incorrectly about the homophobic question. That's what they call it. Then you have to stand in the middle of a circle while all the kids stare at you. One of the questions was, do you have religious beliefs that teach that homosexuality is wrong and a sin? He answered, yes, you had to stand in the middle of a circle.
And so basically what they're doing is to engender hatred of Christian kids.
Right.
And, of course, all of this is done in the name of, oh, we don't want to have hatred in our schools. We don't want to have hatred of homosexuals. I don't think most people hate homosexuals. I certainly don't think the Christians do. But what they are doing is making Christians feel different and, of course, engendering hatred of Christians because they are narrow-minded. They believe homosexuality is wrong, and everybody knows it's perfectly all right.
Right, and they believe that pedophilia is wrong, and incest is wrong, and all other forms of deviant sexual behavior, and as well as premarital sex. So, you're right. It is that kind of real stereotyping, and they're doing it at children, at a young age. They know they can't convince mom and dad, who are maybe in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, that they can convince the children because they are very moldable. And so they're very, very aggressively moving in on school districts up and down the state of California. For example, let me give you another example. One is crossing the line. This was down in your neck of the woods, for one of your stations, I know, Dr. Stan. This is in the Santa Cruz area, where they in a high school, they had the kids, 300 were chosen by the school, and this lay psychologist, wasn't even a certified counselor psychologist, asked the students all these personal questions. If the answer was yes, like, you know, do you have homosexual feelings, do you have a homosexual relative or something, you had to cross over this line and reveal yourself. And these kids at the end were crying and just pouring their guts out. And this is all done with no parental notice, just like in the Arcata matter, no parental notice, no parental consent. And it completely undermined the rights of parents. These kids were just crying. And one of them said, called in on a program I was on and said, it was wonderful. It changed my life. I'll never be the same.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It'll change my life. I will never be the same. And they're using these mind control techniques that have been developed, you know, at these various think tanks, Tavistock and Stanford Research and others, to change our attitude towards God and family and sex and country.
Oh, absolutely. And so it's becoming very common. And like, for example, the presentation that Planned Parenthood put on Arcata, we know that that's been going on in Southern California. The school district claimed that this is just something that the students put together. And yet, how could that be if the exact same program was put on at another school in Southern California? You know?
Maybe it was the same kids.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is that they lie. And
right.
How can you have, children brought up to tell the truth when you have educators that in their education programs in college and courses are taught to lie to the parents to justify their agenda, which is, of course, to create deviancy in our society, which they think is normal. They think that this is perfectly all right.
Well, that's absolutely true. And another example is in the preschool programs. For example, in the San Juan Unified School District, we were contacted by an individual who informed us how the instructors for the preschool kids had received a notice instructing them to sensitize the children to two mommies and two daddies. The concept of two mommies and two daddies. And that was done, of course, with no parental notice or consent. We wanted the teacher to go individually come forward so we could really prosecute on the matter and file an action, but they were too afraid of losing their job, unfortunately, so our hands were tied on that one. Another one we have, another lawsuit is against the school district, the Elk Grove Unified School District, and that's the school district where they showed a film produced by Kaiser. Now, this is done shown all up and down the state. It's a film called Secrets, and in it, it talks about homosexuality in a very favorable, positive way. And this was done without parental notice or consent, so we filed a lawsuit against that school district as well.
Yeah, but of course, what will you do? They'll say, oh, well, all right, we won't show it again, and then they'll come up with something else.
That's right.
The kids don't stand a chance because every image that they see on film or the pictures that they see are indelibly implanted in their minds.
Right.
And this is an attack on the minds of our children.
Right.
If you win the case, I mean, I don't see any solution other than to get our kids out of the schools. It's the only way we're going to be able to protect them. And if you really love them, I think what you're doing is wonderful because we're not going to get all the children out. But anybody who loves their children has to get them out because the schools are being used to teach depravity and sensitize our children to depravity today. Would you say that's a fair statement?
Very much so. I would, if I had a child in a public school, which I don't, I tend to homeschool, I would almost certainly pull my child out of a public school today. Dr. James Dobson, encouraged parents to do so unless they're in a situation, of course, where they just, you know, where they were single parents, their spouse had passed away, and there's just no other choice. But generally speaking, most parents have some kind of choice in the matter, and I would encourage them to consider it. A lot of them just simply are not aware that these things are not isolated. This is becoming the norm throughout the state of California because of that bill signed into law by Governor Gray Davis, AB 537, which recommends all these activities for school districts, recommends them. And so these school districts aren't inventing anything. They're just copying what the governor signed into law to encourage.
And, of course, I think we have to understand that we're dealing with an organized, orchestrated program. Their goal is to capture the soul of your children.
Right.
Well, we're going to have a three-minute break. When we get back, I will invite your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you out there in the listening audience to help us do what we do. And we certainly do 5 hours of talk radio a day. And in fact, somebody just sent us an email asking if we want to do another program in Alabama. As my wife said, you can't take anything on additional, although we are considering taking on a third weekend program. And of course, we hope to syndicate this across America. It'll be heard 10 o'clock in the morning and Saturday mornings, and starting with five stations up in the Great Northwest and a major station up there. In fact, a counterpart of 810 San Francisco, the large 50,000 watt station in San Francisco. It booms up into Oregon, and of course, are almost to the Oregon border, and the one in Spokane, which we would be on, comes well down into Oregon, too. Of course, it has to shut down at night because San Francisco KGO is a clear channel station, but we would be on that, as well as four other stations in the Great Northwest. And, of course, this is how we would begin to influence that area. And then, of course, our next goal would be to try to get into Seattle and give people the chance to hear the truth, the information they're not going to get from other sources. So if you believe that there's a problem, if you believe freedom is worth sacrificing for, as I do, we hope that many of you out there will, number one, consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, in which events you get our four best tapes of the month or our monthly newsletter, or that you would consider seriously making a pledge for so much a month for six months so that we know we'll have the funds coming in to cover that. And incidentally, we got a very, very nice pledge last evening from one of our long-term supporters. And then, of course, we ask that you would consider, if you don't want to do that, just making a simple pledge. But let us know what you can do to stand with us as we begin moving towards another program. And, of course, hopefully we'll begin to take that program not only from the Northwest, but out across America. And that people actually, I was approached to do this by the gentleman who runs the American Christian Network, and he said, I will help you syndicate it. Well, now, I don't know anything about radio or syndication, but he does. He knows how these things are done, and with them working at it and on our team, hopefully we'll be able to get this program heard all across America. So if you would like to be part of our effort, if you believe that there's a problem out there that needs to be addressed, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, which goes into the Model Emergency Health Powers Act, or the former newsletter, which was the April newsletter, that goes into who financed these wicked, wicked terrorists that threaten us today. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this evening is Brad Dacus, and Brad's going to be with us to the end of the hour because our regularly scheduled guest couldn't make it, a death in the family at the last minute. And of course, Brad, why don't we tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your ministry, your website, your telephone number, and of course, if they want to support your excellent efforts, how they can reach you.
Oh, you bet. As you know, we are a nonprofit 501c3 organization. We at the Pacific Justice Institute, and we do our work totally and completely through the support of individuals and a few churches, actually, who put us on their missions list. But it's almost through individuals and people who'd like to support our ministry, our work, or if they'd like to keep up with our cases. You receive our press releases via email at the same time that all the news media get it, so they can get it as well without charge. They can do all this by contacting us at our webpage, and that's simply pacificjustice.org, pacificjustice.org, and it's been reformatted, so it's much easier, right, for people to pull up information that they can find helpful. The other way they can contact us to sign up to get our information in our cases is our toll-free number, and that's to call, and that's 888-305-9129, 888-305-9129. And finally, they can write us if they'd like to write us and send support for our work, become a part of our team. We really appreciate that. And our address is simply P.O. Box 4366, P.O. Box 4366, Citrus Heights, California, 95611.
Okay, well, that's fine. And, of course, Brad does a great, great job. And he's really on the front lines of this battle and helping an awful lot of people who would just have to knuckle under the ACLU or the other organizations if it were not for the fact that they can get pro bono legal help from this organization. And this is not for everything. It's simply for these cases that deal with the moral rights of parents and, of course, with the fact that the church really is under attack today. And believe me, Christianity is going to increasingly come under attack because they're very, very powerful people who hate Christianity and everything it stands for. So what are some of the other things? Now, first of all, what's happening with all these cases cross the line and, you know, the children in the circle and all of these attacks on the minds of our children, you know, and of course you can get a letter and they say, well, we won't do it again, they're going to do it again, aren't they? Or how can we keep them from doing it again?
You bet. You know, there's only one way that we've learned that works, and that is not to settle for just a little letter apologizing, but to actually make them feel pain. And we've kicked in the strategy the last couple of years because we just saw that this is where we're at, this is what's needed. So we're suing for not just an order for them not to do it again, we're suing for monetary damages against these school districts to make them feel pain and to compensate not us, the Pacific Justice Institute, but the parents whose rights have been trampled upon. So, for example, another school district we're suing right now for monetary damages is the Novato Unified School District. And that's where they came into elementary schools and put on these pro-homosexual transsexual presentations to kids down in the second grade level with parents not even knowing about it. That's outrageous. And so they're going to do it again. They're going to do it again this year or this coming next year. So we intend to... So we've already filed a lawsuit. We're suing for monetary damages, and we intend to really hold them to the wall.
Well, you see, the only thing that you can do if you get the monetary damages, then, of course, they're not going to be able to have so much money for all these other wicked things that they're doing with the public schools. And then, of course, they're going to ask for more money. And then, of course, people are going to say, well, why do you need more money? And then it's going to come out that they're losing suits because of their immoral practices,
right,
and their attack on, of course, the psyche of these children. And once people begin to understand what's really going on in the schools, I mean, a lot of this gives depravity a bad name. It's just incredible. You know, Brad, if people had told me 10 years ago this would be going on in California, I'd say, oh, come on now, this couldn't happen. It couldn't happen in America.
You're right. It's unthinkable. It is so despicable, and yet it's so common and so widespread. We anticipate and expect to see this, Dr. Stan, in virtually 95-98% of all public schools within the next 2 to 3 years. And, you know, like, for example, the parents in the Novato Unified School District, after this was done, after we filed our lawsuit, and this incident happened and all, over 100 kids have been pulled out of that small public school district, and they still haven't got the message. Novato still hasn't learned.
Well, but you see, they want every child they can get.
Right.
And they really want to actually destroy their sense of morality. And so they lose 100, but they've still got the rest of them there. And this is why our plea to you is, get your children out of government schools. And this is there's no way we can reform them. Brad is doing everything he can. There are people who are certainly working as much as they can, but the other side controls the reins of power.
Right.
And we're working with Ray Moore. I don't know if you know Colonel Moore, but...
Oh, yes, fine man.
He has a program called Exodus. And Exodus is get your kids out of public schools. He was called by a big foundation that's funded by the people who put out a USA Today, And they've given, I don't know how many hundreds of millions of dollars to this a group, of course, the whole idea is controlling the schools, controlling what the kids get. And he was asked in as a token conservative for a debate on the public schools. And his whole approach was, well, you've done exactly what you intended to do. You've destroyed the morality of our kids. You've dumbed them down. And we are going to take our kids out of schools. He said right. He just could not believe the response. They were frightened to death. They surrounded, you can't take your children out of schools. We need the Christian children there. Yeah, sure they need them there, because that's how they're going to destroy their Christianity and their religious beliefs. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you know anybody who has a child in government schools, get them out. And don't just simply put them into a private school, because they're in the private schools as well. They're even into many of the Christian schools, and they're teaching these kids terrible, terrible things. And even in the Christian school that I was instrumental in founding, you know, within a relatively few years, the wicked people were there after the souls of our children. And they actually did everything they could to destroy the religious faith of my son, who was in that Christian school. And fortunately, they didn't succeed. But there really are wicked people out there, and it's up to you, if you really care about children, to do everything you can to get them out under any circumstances. No education at all is better than the education they're getting, but we'll be offering some excellent homeschooling programs in the very near future as we evaluate this, because we think this is the way to go. Get your children out of the public schools. If there's any way you or other families can work together for homeschooling, fine. If you can't, then get them into good private schools, and then watch the private school to make sure that they are not simply succumbing to this. Well, what about some of the other things you're doing, Brad?
Yeah, along the same lines, let me just say that one thing that we've done and are doing also is that we offer to do is to assist churches and not just informing private schools, because we expect there to be a boom in churches starting to form private schools as these things start to facilitate more and more in the next 2 to 3 years. But also they can form homeschool consortiums. And that's where they actually incorporate as a private school, but it serves as a haven for homeschoolers to operate out of.
Now, how does that work?
Well, the church incorporates as establishes a files as a private school. And so instead of a bunch of individual parents, homeschoolers filing in it separately with the county or the state, just the church files a private school, and then they enroll in that church, a church's private school. But the church doesn't have classrooms. Instead, what they do is they have just a bunch of people signed up who are homeschooling. And then what the church can do, or whatever institution they can do, is occasionally they can get together, have field trips. They can occasionally get together and have sports events. And do things in that regard to help supplement the homeschoolers in their congregation. This is really becoming popular. I know one church in Sacramento, Adventure Christian Church, has a very aggressive homeschool consortium, and I think this is going to grow considerably in California. It has some legal advantages to it as well.
Well, now, what about the testing of the children to make sure that they are getting an education? How does that work, and how is that coordinated? And do the test results have to be turned over to the state, or how does that work?
Yeah, generally, private schools are separate and independent from the from public schools.
How about homeschoolers, though?
Yeah, homeschoolers are as well. The present law in California does not require homeschoolers to do that and have such testing. They really have tremendous freedom. Now, some states do require such testing by even homeschoolers, but California doesn't. And one of the problems with homeschoolers in California, we discovered there are at least a couple counties that we know of, and there are probably several more than we know about. They're trying to intimidate homeschoolers by saying that they're not authorized to file for a private school. They don't say it's illegal. They say they're not authorized. So they use this vague language because they want to intimidate as many as possible without actually telling them it's illegal.
In other words, basically they're trying to frighten parents into going along with the system.
Right.
And risking the souls of their children. Our telephone number is 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest this evening is Brad Dacus of the Pacific Justice Institute, is on the front line of this battle representing parents across California, across really the nation, and certainly all up and down the West Coast in this battle for the souls of their children. So anyway, so you're actually giving recommendations on how churches can organize to set up these consortiums?
That's right. And we think that's a very... it's a very effective tool to take. I know some homeschoolers are just real big on just individual homeschoolers having their own private school set up, but there are some disadvantages to that. I think that that would point people to strongly consider the church consortium. I think that's the best of all worlds. Some parents are still have their kids in charter schools, but charter schools, you just don't know what you're going to get. You know, there's one down in San Diego we work with. It's in a church. A low-income area. It's a black church, and they're just going gangbusters with their resources through this charter school. They have worship, several times a week, and they're doing a great job. However, there's another charter school that we've just helped knock the door down and open up what they're doing, and that's in your listening audience, I might add. It's I believe it's in the Gilroy area, if I'm not mistaken. In the Monterey area, in that area, it's a charter school that will probably be shut down because of the outrageous pro-sexuality things that they've been doing in schools without parents even knowing about it.
And so, really, if you just turn your child over to the schools and you are not constantly on top of it, you have no idea what they're doing. And, you know, they may smile at you very, very sweetly and say, of course, we love your children. Yes, we just love to get into their minds and into their heads. And so it's really up to the parent, because God gave those children to parents, not to school teachers, not to schools. And not to say that most school teachers aren't wonderful people, because most of them are. But, of course, they're trapped in the system. Not of their making, but of our making. And we made it because we weren't involved when the other side was taking over.
Oh, absolutely. You know, another area I think that's real important with our cases I'd like to touch on, if I can, too, is dealing with churches themselves. We have three cases in federal court presently. One of them is about to settle. The second one looks like it may settle as well fairly soon. But these are cases where churches wanted to go and build somewhere, and they were told by local governments, no, anyone can buy that building except you. We don't want a church. And that attitude is growing so much. I know the Sacramento Bee did a front-page article on it this last Friday, or actually on the 10th. I guess that was Monday, yesterday, talking all about the seriousness of the problem in California. And so we're, and also mentioned how we have some 12-plus religious institution churches that we're in the process of representing in California alone, two dozen total. But this is a real serious issue. And one of the cases, we're not handling this particular case, but I think it's important to note, is down in the Cottonwood Church down in Cypress, California, in Southern California. Get this, they have land, right? It's a church. They have land. They have the plans to build on this land. They're excited about it. It's going to meet the needs of their church. Well, what has the city decided to do? They're going to use eminent domain, where they take the land from the church, and instead of using it for the public good, like building a highway or something like that, a park or a school, no, they're going to turn around, flip it, and sell it to Costco. So here you have a church losing their land because the city would rather have a Costco, and the city's literally going to take it, a, quote, fair market value, end quote, and then sell it to Costco. That would be outrageous if they got away with it, because that would mean that city governments could literally take the land of any church, with a building on it or not, just shut down a church, plow it down, take the land, and sell it to whoever they wanted to at the drop of a hat. So this is a very important case, and we're watching it very closely.
Well, you know, this has been of concern to me for many, many years, and I've seen this happen over and over and over again, where they've used eminent domain not just with churches, but with other people, to take their property at a reduced value, because they set what the fair market value is, and then turn around and sell it to developers who are in bed with the people in the Planning Commission and elsewhere. Always in the name, of course, we want to, do something to improve the community. I got a call from a man over in, from a family over in the San Jose area. There's something like 6,500 homes that they want to condemn in the blighted part of the city, so they can make it, you know, nice. These are people who have lived there for 30, 40 years. This is their homes. And, of course, they're not going to make it into a park. They're going to tear those homes down and then sell it to developers. What can these people do? And this is all part of the sustainable development. We want to get the people out of their homes and force them into these developed communities, where we can watch them and we can provide them with nice homes rather than their own homes.
Yeah, that is really unfortunate because, if a developer, the free market can take care of that without the government coming in. If the free market, and private investors can look at an area in a community and say, hey, these homes are taking up land that would be much more efficiently used, well, they can go and buy it. They can talk to the owners and say, hey, we'll pay you the money. We'll pay you this high price and buy these houses and tracts to build on.
Yeah, but of course they don't want to do that because they get it cheaper the other way, and after all, they have to be able to, a little help for the people who've seized it under the eminent domain. And do not think for one minute that there aren't under the table large amounts of money that go back and forth.
Oh, absolutely. And it's real unfortunate because, the bottom line, we have a free economic system that allows people to buy land if they want to make it. If they offer the right price, they generally get the property. Having government come in and just strip every one of their properties, that and take them and force them to have to move somewhere where perhaps they won't be able to afford to move. That's not the concern apparently of a city, and yet that's something that they have to take into consideration if they're going to sell it. If they don't get to sell it, they just have it taken by a city. So that's a very serious thing, the abuse of eminent domain, and we at the Pacific Justice Institute intend to fight very fervently against any local government that is attacking the property rights of a church to function as God has called them to function.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, what are the chances you're going to be able to stop this? Is there federal legislation that is in your favor? And isn't there some new bill that was passed having to do with just this issue?
Yeah, there's one that's called the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act of 2000, and it's a very powerful piece of federal legislation. Unfortunately, it's silent on the specific issue of dealing with eminent domain. It deals with land use restrictions and zoning issues. And so the key question is where you have to get some legal mumbo-jumbo in the courts to figure out whether or not this federal statute applies to eminent domain questions. But even if it didn't, the ability for a local government to just close down a church, seize the church, maybe all the churches in their community, shut them all down, and build something else on them, whatever, shopping malls, that's a clear infringement upon the First Amendment, which is designed to protect religious freedom and institutions from state control and intervention.
But of course, even more than that, it's an attack on the right of private property.
Absolutely.
And without the right to property, there is no life, there is no liberty.
Right.
So what do you do about these people, these bureaucrats who know what's best for the community? So we're going to take this property that belongs to the church, and we're going to give it to Costco at a reduced price because we wanted to come in here because it would be so nice to have a Costco here.
Well, first off, I think the most important thing is recognizing that the villain isn't really Costco, simply because if it wasn't Costco, there's a whole line of other merchants that would love to move there. The villain is that local government. If the head of Costco had a vision that night and cold sweats and tears and realized, oh, this is the wrong thing to do, we're not going to do it, they'd go to some other merchant instead, Target or someone else. The villain is the local government and their desire to undermine these institutions. And that's why what needs to be done is simply to aggressively challenge whenever they abuse the privilege of eminent domain provided by the Fifth Amendment Takings Clause.
Okay, fine. Well, I think it's so vitally important that people realize that you are there and they can contact you. What should they do if they have a problem?
Yeah, well, if they have any difficulty like this, I encourage them to contact us at the Pacific Justice Institute. As I said before, we do all of our work without charge because of the faithful support of I know some of your listeners. And so we're here to represent them without charge, pick up all the costs and expenses, provide legal counsel and representation in the courts, in a case that may go all the way to the Supreme Court for that matter. And so they need to get legal counsel right up front, because otherwise they'll be walked on so many times. Churches, we find out, said, well, no, we didn't build because we were told that we would be turned down. And that's what they tell all of them these days. You know, you don't even apply, you'll be turned down. And when we go to bat for them, they get the permits. And I give a case-in-case example where that's happened. And it's because we argue the law, and we argue it very hard.
Well, God bless you for being there and for everything that you do. And again, of course, our guest this evening has been Brad Dacus, and his organization is the Pacific Justice Institute. Why don't you once again give out your telephone number and your website?
You bet. Yeah, we have not only a huge attorney network, we have been told that we have more cases defending faith and family on the West Coast, Dr. Stanley, than any organization in the country, and that's because of so many who are part of our team. If you want to get a hold of us, then call us at our toll-free number, which is 888-305-9129. That's 888-305-9129. Or our webpage, which is www.pacificjustice.org, pacificjustice.org, and I also speak quite a bit in churches and other places as well to enlighten people as to what's going on.
Well, I know Brad personally. He's a fine young man doing a great job. We're deeply indebted to you. Thanks so very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you for the privilege.
Right, bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, that was Brad Dacus. I hope you enjoyed it, Pacific Justice Institute. And it's just so important that we have people out there representing us, and certainly know that there are people who really care about these righteous issues. And, of course, if you have your children in the public school, you need help, go to him. But if I can give you a word of advice, get your children out if you love them. They do not stand a chance. And I would think the most frightening words that a parent could hear is when the child comes home and says, Dad, I'm gay. And why are they gay? Because they, one of the children we had, Karen Holgate, told us about the child who came home, told their parent that their instructor had told them, it's an 11-year-old, that they should start experimenting with sex with boys, because, of course, they might actually be homosexual. Could that happen in our schools today? Sure it could, because we've lost our compass. We've lost our vision of righteousness, and we are no longer a Christian nation. Well, please pray for America. Certainly pray for our leaders, pray for our ministers, pray for revival in America. But lastly, we ask you to remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And we'll be back with you, I guess, not tomorrow evening, but Thursday evening. And until then, may the Lord be with you.
you talk to people in the same thing, it's just a California movement that works for the other. I mean, honey, could you turn on the overhead light? Well, I just can't put it on.